couple briefly. I told him of the Goralski incident, and I said under the circumstances I thought it'd be unfortunate for him, Max, to raise this subject for discussion with you this afternoon, that I was sure that you felt, that you recognized that when he went out there, it had been for a purpose of a year, and that if he felt that it desirable to come back for personal reasons, as he got close to the end of the year, I was certain that you wouldn't think it improper for him to raise it for discussion at that time, and that it need not be raised now or any time in the near future. And he said, well, he thought that was reasonable enough. As a matter of fact, he was planning to come back or would like to come back again for another visit on June 1st. Columbia has offered him a degree, I judge, within a few days thereafter, and he'd like to accept that degree, and it'd be appropriate in his mind to come in for another period of counsel June 1st, and he thought that might be an appropriate time to raise it. I encouraged him to that schedule.
Sure. 6 weeks or 2 months. Right. Every 6 weeks, 2 months. Right. We told him when he went out there, we'd put a plane there for him to come in whenever he wanted to,
right.
Didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this will fit very well, Mr. Wright.
Now, I guess I ought to lead with my feeling toward him, so there's no doubt about that, and
I
let him look at me and see how I feel.
Right. I think there's some advantage in that.
You think that he may be disturbed, think we're playing him
for
a fool or something?
No, I don't think. No, I don't think so, Mr. Brad. He was very cordial and very warm.
Have we had any differences with him?
No.
Has he had any differences with you at any time?
No. No, we have a very strong bond of mutual respect and affection, I think.
Have I had any differences with you and Rusk on these matters where my way has prevailed? Haven't we always agreed before it's over?
Oh, yes, absolutely, Mr. President. No, I think that there's been more unity both beneath the surface and above the surface on Vietnam policy in the last few months than there has been at any time in the last several years. And I don't think the press is reflecting anything to the contrary. Once in a while you get these dope stories.
Where does this story come from, this headline today? Big banner. Embassy retaliation ruled out. Johnson bars direct reprisal for bombing.
My God, I have no idea. I have
Johnson has ruled out any...
It's
a star today.
Yeah, but I mean Saigon or Washington.
No, here. Bernard Wurtzman. President Johnson has ruled out any dramatic retaliation for the bombing of the embassy in Saigon. I don't think we ought to be ruling in or out.
Absolutely.
We ought to be telling people what
Shouldn't
we're doing.
Shouldn't be any discussion of it at all.
Well,
I don't know. Even know him. I'll have to get and look at the filing.
How do I tell people that? Should I circulate the memo to them?
There's
four of us there.
That's right. No, Dean and I have that, and people in this building didn't know it. The only person over here that hasn't been involved in it at all is Buzz Wheeler, and he developed this suggestion on Haiphong, which I mentioned briefly yesterday, and which I didn't even get time to report back to him on until roughly noontime today. I did talk to him then and told him that we discussed Haiphong. I told you that he recommended it, but that I recommended against it. And he said, well, he thought there was...
Tell him you busted up the meeting before I could... Ask us to do it.
Pardon me?
You tell him you busted up the meeting before I got to accepting his recommendation.
No, but I did tell him I recommended against it because I thought it unwise at this stage to reintroduce a tit-for-tat policy. I thought it confused the program. And he said, well, he was very much inclined to that view himself. He just wanted to have an alternative here in case anyone wanted to retaliate. So he's not at all upset about not going against Haiphong now. And furthermore, he didn't know a damn thing about the conversation until about roughly noontime today. So I'm sure it didn't come from him. But we've just got a leaky government, I guess, try as we will to tighten up.
Do you think it hurts us much?
No, I don't. I don't like to see it happen, but I don't think it hurts us very much. I don't think this Taylor story is going to hurt you at all.
Do you think that there's more of it this year than there was last year?
No, I think there's less this year on important issues. And particularly, I think, Mr. President, that you have more unity in the upper levels on Vietnam today than you did, let's say, in that horrible period of the Hillsman CIA Defense Department wrangle.
Do you know Cohen of the Clark Clifford's board, Pat Cohen?
Yes, I've met him. I don't know him very well.
What, you don't have an evaluation of him?
It depends for what job.
CIA.
Oh, definitely not. No, Helms is far superior to him, in my opinion, intellectually and otherwise. Now, maybe people who know him better would have a different view, but and my opinion is based on not only rather infrequent contact with him, but Park Clifford, I think, might know both better than I do. Mac Bundy might, I'm certain, knows both better than I do. I'd be very surprised if Mac's view was different from mine.
I haven't mentioned it to Bundy, and I have, I don't know him, and I've asked him to come in to see him. Clark thinks extremely, very high on him, very high on him. And I told Clark to bring this other fellow in. He has difficulty between the two, but I believe this is pure speculation. I think he would weigh heavily in Cohen's favor.
Hmm.
And he deals with him all the time.
Well,
says he's direct, said he's very knowledgeable. Said
you should put more weight on Clifford's view or the view of someone who knows him better than I. But I haven't been overly impressed by him for that.
Well, have you been overly impressed by the other fellow?
By Helms?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been favorably impressed by him, Mr. President. As I mentioned to you one day, I think he could stand another year or two of maturing.
Yeah.
Before he reaches the point of taking over.
Well, now this fellow is completely lost. We had a meeting this morning with Harry McPherson, and he says it's hopeless. He says that the chairman came down as a real good friend of mine and willing to give a leg for me. But he says that he can't get one vote on our side, not one. And they've got the damnedest bill that you ever saw that's going to require approval and notification of the committee before anything's closed. And unless the committee gives affirmative approval to Congress, you can't close anything. And it goes back to the 31 days when they log-rolled and pork-barreled, and Pat Harrison from Mississippi, who was Democratic chairman of the Finance Committee, said that we can't operate Veterans Hospital by log rolling, and we can't operate the Veterans Administration. So he passed a bill that left it up to the Administrator of Veterans Affairs. Now they've got a bill that goes right back to the old 31-day. And Harry says that they'll pass it, we'll veto it, they'll pass it unanimously over our veto. Then the question comes, what do we do? They can't figure out what to do. He and Gordon and all of them met this morning. I just came over to take a nap, got in bed, haven't started to sleeping yet.
No,
but
sorry,
no, that's all right. I was talking to Bill Moyer and some of them here in my room. I told him, let's just get the money when it's passed, the appropriation bill, and we just don't operate the money. We don't allocate it. They say, well, how can you do that when the Congress is unanimous?
I think constitutionally.
And what does that do? What does that do to all the other program when you got the majority leader and the minority leader and the speaker and everybody feeling deeply about it and a unanimous vote? It looks like you cut off your nose, spite your face. You may save 20 million hospitals and you may lose the war. And I thought, well, maybe I could appoint a federal judge or somebody to look at these things. Now, I have read these hearings, Bob, at night myself, nearly every night till 2 or 3 o'clock. From what I've read, and I haven't read them all, I think they're right and we're wrong. This fellow says that he hadn't had a chance to make his case. So I put him in the Jetstar and told him to go see each one of these places himself and see. He gives 5 reasons for closing Miles City. I'm sure you've given 5 reasons for closing a Navy Yard. They come up and they say 4 of them are outright lies, that they have no basis in fact whatever, and they prove it by the administrators and so on and so forth, official people. The other one is a half-truth, and that's what they did on Montana. And Bobby's been up over New York, and we've just got to each one of these things. They say we're just going to insist on city hospitals, and we can't do it in this government. We've got to have some in the country places. Everybody won't go to New York to see their father when he gets in the hospital. They won't go see him in Montana.
And Miles City's in Montana, and they're not going to travel 500 miles to the next one. And so that's about what it is. Now, I'm just lost. I really don't know what to do about it.
You suppose that you can swing some of the votes on the committee enough to defeat that provision by giving on a few of them, particularly the few of the powerful people?
I believe they'll all stick together. If you give Mansfield and Bobby Kennedy and a few like that, you see.
What you'd have to do is pick two or three of the powerful ones, such as Mansfield.
And Dirksen.
And Dirksen, and forget Bobby Kennedy. And pick one or two of the unimportant people and a couple of the important people and settle for 7 out of 11. And say on the others that they presented new evidence that you have always said that you would reconsider if additional evidence not considered at the time the decision was made was brought forth. This is a position I've always taken on all these 669. You can't say that you close your mind to anything they want to tell you. What you have to say is that, we believe we acted properly. We examined all this evidence. If you've got anything new, bring it forth. If it's a material fact and affects the decision, we didn't consider it, we'll change the decision.
What would you think about us taking a retired judge and just asking him to take a look at it?
I think it's a good idea.
Put it off maybe in a decision where we don't have to face up to it now, but give him
I think it's a good
90
idea.
Days.
Sure, I think it's a good idea. Get beyond this May 1st date and let the thing roll a while and agree in the meantime to wait until he decides.
And then maybe let him decide he made a mistake.
Sure, on three or four of them. It just happens it was Mansfield's and Dirksen's. I think that makes good sense. And I wouldn't include Bobby Kennedy's. I'd make sure the judge hit a couple of tough, powerful people hard and looked favorably on the views of two or three other powerful people and split the group that way.
The damn trouble is that they're unanimous in the Congress, both sides. They have to.
They may not be unanimous if you split them this way. And if you do it with a judge, and furthermore, if you push it ahead, they'll get toward the end of the session and they won't be ready to put that kind of a provision in.
I gather you're going to have to pretty well work with the CIA man a lot. Why don't you talk to Clifford what he thinks about
going
and get
the bill?
Then you ought to look at his record through the year.
I'll be happy to. All right. Thank you.